Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Folks, we've got a great show lined up for you today. In the 12 o'clock hour, we'll talk about President Biden saying that high gas prices are part of an incredible transition that, when it's over, will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels. Of course, meanwhile, you and I will be poorer, and the country will compromise its moral compass by getting in bed with the Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro. Looks like the path that we're headed down. And we'll visit with Eric Smith, professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy, to talk about that. Also to talk about hitting the diesel reserves. Prices are going crazy, especially in the Northeast Corridor, and what that means to the country. The Fairness in Women's Sports Act passes both the House and Senate in the Louisiana legislature, and it heads to the governor for his action. Is it a solution looking for a problem? Or is it coming to a competitive sport or state or locality near you? We'll talk to the author of the bill, Beth Mizell, Senate Bill 44. She'll join us in the 11 o'clock hour. Press about defense of Taiwan if China invades same, in conflict with the U.S. diplomatic strategy described as strategic ambiguity. Or is it a move to strategic clarity? Say what you mean and mean what you say. Here to talk about that is Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis with Defense Priorities Senior Fellow joins us. Lieutenant Colonel Davis, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
So you and I have talked many times about the Russian-Ukrainian war. Obviously, it seems that there's a lot of saber rattling going on right now. In fact, jets scrambled out of Japan because Chinese and Russian jets coming close to violating Japanese airspace. Just a lot going on out there in East Asia.
Yeah, there's no doubt that is. You know, kind of as you mentioned there, the Russian-Ukraine war kind of hangs over everything. And now then with Biden's trip into Asia, that just there's kind of co-mingling with potential trouble on the horizon with China and Taiwan. And, you know, whether, as you said in your intro there, whether this represents Biden's comment on Monday, whether that represents a policy change or just more strategic ambiguity in a different way, really remains to be seen. But, you know, I think that we have to be real careful that we don't violate what you just said there, which is say what we don't mean, and then when it comes push to shove, that we don't follow through. And I think that's not a good way to go.
So for the benefit of the listening audience, if you could describe strategic ambiguity, because I think it runs counter to how most people live their lives, right? I mean, we raise kids, we work with folks, we communicate with our boss. Typically, it's you say what you mean and you mean what you say.
Yeah, and in this case, this is one of the very few cases where I actually think that it's a good strategy to use, because I'm otherwise, especially coming from the military background that I do, I'm a big advocate of mean what you say and say what you mean. But strategic ambiguity goes all the way back to really 1972, to where both the United States, China agreed to do wordplay. So we both said, yes, we agree there's the one China, and that's all. And, you know, China and Taiwan were both one China. We just had different interpretations of what that meant. So it was ambiguous. China means that Beijing, the Communist Party, is the one China, and Taiwan's a part of it. And to us, no, the Chinese nationalists on Taiwan were the rightful leaders of China, and that's the one China that really is, because this was spawning from the 1949 Civil War in China. And we were both like, okay, we just won't define what that means, and we'll just not go to war, and everything will be happy. We'll have these relations that we have and make our economies grow with each other, and we'll just let that be the case. And as it evolved over time, strategic ambiguity meant that we have the Taiwan Relations Act, which says we'll help the Taiwanese defend themselves against any potential Chinese aggression, which they have never said anything besides that they would use force to reunify since 1949. And so we're ambiguous that will we just help them defend themselves as we're doing with Ukraine and Russia right now, or will we actually enter the war on their side against China? And it's just been ambiguous. It hasn't been very clear. And what that has done is it's given Beijing pause over the years to not be, because they're not certain that we would stay out. They think that maybe we'll come in. And so that has the deterrent effect on China going in. So it doesn't give them a green light to go in, so to speak. But it's been unclear. Well, that's served everybody well over the years. But I think over time, China has, especially over the last 20 years, they've spent 20 years preparing their military for the eventuality of potentially fighting the United States. So the ambiguity is not having as much effect anymore, because China almost expects that we would come in on the side of Taiwan, and they have a military to be able to handle that. And I think we're getting closer to the point right now to where China's like, okay, if we want to move on Taiwan, we're going to do it whether you're ambiguous or not, whether you come in or stay out. And, you know, I think that that's something that we have to be careful about, which is why I caution a great deal of concern or argue that we that Biden should be very careful about his words, because I don't want us to lock us into that we would come in on the side of Taiwan, especially if China really is serious about taking it, because we cannot get into a war with China, which could go nuclear or even conventionally could end up sinking aircraft carriers, knocking our planes out of the sky, all of which China can do much more effectively than Russia can. And that would not be in our interest if we tried to help and then failed.
Yeah, obviously the Chinese responded in a very strong fashion. And I quote, China expresses strong dissatisfaction and firm opposition to the remarks by the U.S. side. There is but one China in the world. China will take firm actions to safeguard its sovereignty and security interests. We mean what we say. That's a Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson, Wang Wenbin.
Yeah, and I think he means that. I think that China does mean that. And look, the Taiwan Relations Act has some good foundations to it that we will help Taiwan defend themselves. But here's a problem, and why I'm not so sagacious as many others are that saying, hey, we should, you know, we can't let Taiwan get taken by China, etc. Look, Taiwan has to be taking their defense seriously before we do. It can't be that Taiwan's security is more important to us than it is to Taiwanese. And when you look at the fact that Taiwan last year spent 1.7% GDP on its own defense, 1.7% with this, you know, very looming Chinese potential threat, and that some of their frontline combat units are only manned at 60% because they can't find enough people to join, that tells you that the Taiwanese people don't take their own defense very seriously. And when you keep hearing the United States say, hey, we're going to give you billions and billions and more for weapons, and we're going to potentially come in on your side, there's the reason. I mean, you can understand where they're going, okay, cool. You be our defense. We're not going to worry about it. We're going to let you take care of it. And they're not going to take care of their own defense. And I am just categorically against potentially shedding American blood on behalf of another country that won't do first step up to its own defense.
This is kind of revisited, right? I mean, we had the same issue with Germany in Western Europe and other countries in Western Europe as well that are not meeting, although Taiwan is not a member of NATO, and I don't want to confuse the two, but there is a threshold with NATO that, you know, that you're showing all of your alliance members that you're serious about your own defense. And it would seem to me that should at least be the standard for all these other countries, even though they're not in NATO, but they're our ally.
We're friendly with them. It's, you know, allies.
And I'm not sure that they're our ally. That may be a bridge too far.
We have common cause, but, you know, we don't have any mutual security guarantees like we do with NATO. But the analogy there is very, very apt because, you know, we see over the last decade at least that most European states up to this point did not view the threat from Russia conventionally very seriously because they didn't put in their money where their mouth is. They were very content to let us handle it. And look, we're still doing the same thing. We have provided upwards of $50 billion just this year alone, and all of Europe together has contributed $15 billion, so basically a third of what we have. And you've got to ask, why is that? Why does the United States put 100,000 of our troops into Europe and now much moving forward to the east instead of the European countries doing that who are on those, you know, alleged front lines? And the reason is because we'll do it, and they know we'll do it. Now, if the same thing holds true in Asia, it can't be that America is everybody's frontline defense, including our own. That'll bankrupt us over time, but that'll also get us sucked into a war that we shouldn't even fight. Those nations have to step up to their defense first, and we need to be the backstop. And I think there's too little concern about that and too much eagerness on our side to do everything for everybody. And I don't think we should do that. It's not good for us.
This mantra, as you just outlined, U.S., handle it, that can't go on for long. And all of these folks that are our enemies, they know that. They're not fools. They realize that we're not able to. In fact, just in military arms that we've supplied to Ukraine thus far has put us at a significant defense disadvantage because we don't have the supply chain in place to replace all of this military equipment in a short order, right?
Yeah, that is exactly right. And I'm so glad you brought that up because that's something that doesn't get hardly any notice because everybody's so excited and understandable, want to help Ukraine, that we don't calculate the cost to our own defense in that all these, you know, weapons that we've been sending, we're now at a severe dearth of the amount that we would need if we even had to go to war. And you see that it's going to take years, that's a plural, to get a lot of this stuff replaced once, you know, chains get, you know, activated. And once we start getting the supply chains turned on, then the production, all that is long lead times. And now that we've given thousands of those missiles away, tens of thousands, and that's in just one category. Now you've given away another 100 artillery pieces. People want to give more. And, you know, in the event we get dragged into either this war or another war, some of those things we're going to need. And now we're not going to have them. And, you know, why should we put our country's security at risk, especially in the Russian situation, in a way that might not and probably, in my estimation, will not tip the balance in favor of Ukraine? It's just going to cost us and cost them as well.
And I don't mean to make light of this, but my confidence level is not that high that we're even really thinking about this and that we're actually U.S. handling it on our own accord, much less someone else, in light of the baby formula debacle that we're dealing with right now, which goes without saying, is a lot easier to produce than a guided missile, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, I think you're onto something right there. Yeah. And if we're having trouble on something like that, you can imagine on something with long lead times, like, you know, even these missiles here or artillery pieces. I mean, these things take a long time. And we don't really have a plan in place to do that. We're scrambling trying to figure it out now as we keep talking about giving more and more, because you heard the Secretary of Defense and some others say, hey, we're in this for the long haul with Ukraine. This is probably a years-long thing, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said. You know, and no one's asking this question, hang on, if we're already struggling to get these things replaced in our own inventories, you're talking about continuing to give more. Where's all this going to come from, and what's that going to do to our security, you know, and our ability to defend ourselves if we need them? Those questions aren't being asked, and they should be asked.
The cozy relationship between China and Russia that we often talk about has not yielded the same amount of defense or military equipment support that we've provided to Ukraine, has it?
It has not up to this point, especially in Taiwan. But it is, you know, the amount of money being tossed around and people wanting to spend more and more and more is going up. There's just too much, Newell, too much emotion ruling the day and too little analysis going on at what some of these things even mean and the ramifications for us. And that's a problem to me because we're thinking too much with our hearts and not enough with our heads and potentially could cost us one day. And I think that we need to put the brakes on this stuff.
Did you hear some news yesterday about a special forces, U.S. special forces unit being used over there?
I have heard that. I believe it was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff himself who said there is some consideration for using special operations forces to defend our embassy in Kiev instead of the traditional Marine Corps. And I'm not really sure why you would want to do that for defense, because that's definitely not what special forces are designed for at all, to just defend embassy personnel. And of course, that makes you suspicious that they're there for other reasons. And the primary things of our special forces is to train other countries' militaries. And so, you know, it sounds like you're trying to pull the wool over somebody's eyes. If you're going to train Ukraine troops in their country under threat of war, you realize that you're putting our troops at risk of also being attacked by Russians and killed in the line of duty. And, you know, that's a red line that we've got to be really careful about.
Obviously, this is a huge chess game going on right now. And it seems to me that the board is getting really crowded. And it's almost as if we have too many more pieces than the traditional chess game going on right now, with Finland, Sweden wanting to come into NATO, Russia cutting off gas to Finland, getting it from my mind just went blank on the adjacent country to them, and obviously we have Wimbledon now has even come into the foray because they are not letting Russian and Belarus players play in Wimbledon, and now there are those that are attacking that. There's a lot of moving parts, is what I'm trying to say.
There really are, and you know, some of the more significant ones, again, using that same concept that people aren't thinking, you know, two and three moves ahead like you're supposed to in chess. Look, come the summer and especially into next fall, all these sanctions that we're putting into and all these bans on Russian gas and oil and a lot of other economic sanctions have rebounding effects too. And they're going to start really hitting hard in Europe and in the West on our own economies that are going to start causing us problems. The military and a lot of people are eager to say, yeah, let's drag this thing out for years and it just harm Russia's conventional military. Not thinking that our own economies are going to struggle and suffer mightily over that time. And can we afford to continue to harm our own economies for years and then, you know, have that affect the livelihoods of our own people and just in this country across the board? People just aren't thinking that stuff through. And I think, man, we damn well better start doing it pretty quick, because if our support for really what is, in my estimation, in my analysis, a losing proposition in Ukraine, it probably is not going to change the outcome of that conflict, yet it is going to harm our own economies in both the West and in the United States in particular. And I'm telling you, here's something to be watching for. The longer this goes and the more pain it causes on regular citizens in throughout Europe and the United States, there's going to start to become a lot more divisions. And there already are some fault lines starting to emerge already among the West, because some of these countries are like, hey, Russia's not going to attack me. I know that they don't have the conventional capacity to do so. So why do I want to keep supporting something that's harming my economy? Hungary is one of them. They're saying, I'm not going to join this ban on Russian military. It'll be a nuclear option against my economy. So we already see that happening. And, you know, we just better start paying a lot more attention to second and third order effects before we hurt ourselves seriously.
All politics and maybe even diplomacy are local in the end, right?
Indeed they are.
Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Truly appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great week.
Always my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, Defense Priorities Senior Fellow. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.